Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo back in the home office. We're still floating around here. Maybe Noah's Ark is going to be built by somebody here in the Pacific Northwest pretty soon. We're getting so much rain. But hey, that's what keeps us lush and green. But we have a wonderful, wonderful guest today that I am so delighted that we're able to have. His name is David Nuffer. And we're going to be talking about someone that he has a tremendous admiration for. In fact, his book is titled The Best Friend I Ever Had. And it's about a man named Ernest Hemingway, who was an absolutely incredible writer. But David has quite a background with him, and he's on the line with us right now. David, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Honored to be here.
Well, David, you found that even though you were very successful in your own life, that there was a passion that you probably never in a million years thought that was going to bring such tremendous information into your life about one individual, and that was Ernest Hemingway. You said it came about because of the works that he did that you read.
Right.
What was that particular story that really grabbed your imagination?
Well, God, we all started reading Hemingway in high school, and then I graduated from high school in 1950, a long time ago, and then bullfighting became a craze in the 50s here in California, and Death in the Afternoon is the best thing that Hemingway wrote. Is the best thing ever written about bullfighting, and that's how it started. And then, coupled with the fact that at the end of the 60s, I decided I better read some more of Hemingway's books. So I had not read For Whom the Bell Tolls, so I went to the local library here and got it, and from then on I was hooked.
You were hooked. Hemania. You said is a word, hemania, H-E-M-A-N-I-A. You said might
yes.
be a word to describe your interest in Ernest Hemingway.
Yes.
Although you
That's
don't what, feel like you're manic on this. You feel
well,
like
I'm manic, but I could be close, you know.
You could be close. You had some interesting information to share. You have, at this time in your life, read about every biography about him. And that's just been going on and on through the years because there is so much mystery about Hemingway. But you have a collection of your own about this man. You have 252 books, including first editions of most of his books. You have a
that's
complete
true.
26 edition package of Ken, a leftist magazine from the late 30s, 14 of which carried articles by Hemingway about the Spanish
that's
Civil
right.
War. That's how far we're going back. And for those of you that are young listening to this, you get Spanish Civil War, what was that? Well, we'll tell you a little bit about that. Three copies of the March 1st, 1992 edition of the Toronto Star, which includes the Lost Hemingway stories written by him when he worked for the paper in 1922. And your list goes on and on. My goodness. You just have this fabulous, fabulous collection about this man. And you started off with his stories. What's so intriguing about Ernest that you decided that this was something that you really had to become an investigative reporter about and detective?
Almost. Archibald McLeish called him God's spy on Earth. And I think that's true. I think the man was completely unique. There have been more adjectives said about Ernest Hemingway than any other person in history. He's except maybe Jesus. He's an incredible individual who opened up new vistas for everybody. And what I wanted to find out along with collecting all this stuff, was find out what he was really like. What was this man really like? And that's when I interviewed these people, these 12 people around the world, that's what I was trying to find out what he was really like. And I think I got a pretty good feel for it. And it's in my book.
Yes, it is. And I was fascinated with a lot of the details, because throughout the years, there have been a lot of myths that have evolved regarding Ernest Hemingway, as I think there often is about someone like him, anyone who becomes really renowned. And
right.
I think of people like Elizabeth Taylor and, you know, there's
right.
the famous stars of different times. I think Elizabeth Taylor is still alive, but regardless, they
yes,
have
she is.
A mystique that is often promoted, either by PR or something, and then it becomes a life of its own. It gains its own mystical persona.
Yeah.
And you went after this. You really decided you were going to find out the truth, and you just met some fascinating people. Tell us about Nita and Walter Hauck. You call it Papa's Mob. Or in Papa's Mom. And Papa was the term that just about everybody, when they were talking about it, they'd say, oh, Papa this or Papa that. How in the world did that come about?
Well, I thought it was an affectation for a while. But then I learned that in 1939 when his kids came out to catch him in Idaho, they all called him Papa. So I think that the word Papa started with his kids, and he liked being called Papa, and he called women he knew daughter, and maybe that was an affectation, but I think it was a legitimate appellation that came from his kids.
Mm-hmm. And so other people just picked up on it, and he said that was cool,
yeah.
That was fine, he really liked it.
Yeah, he did.
There's so much about his life that you discovered, and you have gone to all the Hemingway conferences, which are around the world. In fact, you're going to one in Switzerland, am I not correct?
Yes, sir.
A short time that's coming up.
Yes, I'm giving a talk at the 14th Biennial Convention of the Hemingway Society in Lausanne, Switzerland, in about 3 weeks.
Amazing.
I'm going to talk about my book.
Go ahead. Yes. Excuse me? What were you going to say?
Well, Walter and Nita Hauck became good friends of mine. I mean, Walter's really a close friend of mine now, although Nita Hauck passed away, gosh, 15 years ago. But Walter's become a very good friend of mine, and so was Tilly Arnold, who's the subject of Chapter 2 of my book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She became really close to Mary and my wife and myself. But Nita was a secretary to Ernest. From 1949 to 51 or 2, down in Cuba. And she typed up his dictations. She typed up his manuscripts. She and Walter fell in love with Nita, and they got married. They had the reception at the Hemingway farm, which they called the Finca Vigia, in Cuba, south to the southeast of southeast of Havana, and had the reception there, and they became very good friends. And Walter Hauck has developed a whole package of things to somebody's archives. We're trying to find someone who'd be interested in taking all this rare material that Walter has,
mm-hmm.
and a unique material, and have it put it into a research facility.
Well, I bet you there's going to be opportunities with colleges across the country that might be very interested in adding this to their libraries, because there's just so much fascinating information about this man. Now, when he was in Cuba, that's when
yeah.
he wrote Across the River and Into the Trees, The Old Man and the Sea, which was made into a movie, The Garden of Eden, and Islands in the Stream.
That's right. And Movable Feast.
And Movable Feast.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So Cuba was very important, and Cuba was nothing like today. Cuba at that time was very open. People would go back and forth to Cuba.
Sure.
Fidel Castro had not, you know, gone in and mucked everything up. It just was a quite a different environment. And his love of the sea, yes. I mean, it was very, very different. Nita was a civilian in Army intelligence at the time he met her. And
yes, she worked for the embassy, that's right.
Yes, and then Hemingway, how he met her was he went in to get his Bronze Star that he had been awarded for meritorious service in Europe in 1944. This man, a lot of what he wrote about, he actually lived.
Oh, he really believed that. You write what you know. And but you also make up a lot. You don't.
But he was
actually connected with five wars, two of which he just observed. The Turkish Greco war he just observed as a newspaper reporter, and he had an assignment from one of the guys in Roosevelt's administration to check out the Sino-Soviet war going on before World War II. But he fought as an ambulance driver in World War One. He was injured badly, and then in World War in the Spanish Civil War, he spent about 2 years in Spain covering that for the North American Newspaper Alliance, and also the World War Two. He was in the first wave of people into the Normandy on the Omaha Beach. He didn't get onto the beach because of the guy who was driving the boat, thank God, because he would have been killed. But he led his little band of irregulars into Paris ahead of De Gaulle when Paris was liberated. He's an amazing man, just an amazing man.
Now, go ahead.
Well, he opened up vistas for the common man, deep sea fishing and safari hunting and big game hunting and little game. His life was so exciting, and the things he did, he just opened it up for a lot of people who hadn't thought it was feasible for them to do so, started doing it, and he's just an amazing man.
Now, you have photos throughout your book. You have Hemingway's corner in which there is a bronze statue, a bust of Hemingway and a photo of him, and Fidel Castro, interestingly enough, his photo is on that same wall that the stuff about Hemingway is.
That's right.
But it's a fascinating phenomena how you have been able to go back into areas. Now, one of the big, big components in his life was a woman by the name of Tilly Arnold. Now, Ernest Hemingway was married how many times?
Four times.
He was married four times.
Right.
Tilly Arnold worked with him, and he loved her dearly, but there was never anything in between them. They were two people that seemed to balance each other out, and Tilly is just an amazing woman. I mean, just an incredible woman.
She was incredible. We really enjoyed her, and she was so open with us, with my wife and myself, and Hemingway may have made one attempt, but she knew better than to fall for any kind of moves like that. And I asked her once, well, did your husband ever ask if Hemingway had ever made a move, if he ever made a move on you? And she said, no, he knew me. I mean, her husband knew that she was straight as an arrow.
Mm-hmm.
But she and Ernest were just very, very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
Very close.
Well, she was one of those people that he trusted implicitly with everything.
That's
along
correct.
With Nita. But Tilly was quite an interesting person because she was right there involved with so many things. And, you know, it just was amazing. You've got photos of Gary Cooper with Hemingway, and Tilly's there. She was so pretty. She was just a lovely, lovely woman, and spunky.
Yeah, she was spunky.
Little tiny gal.
She was asked by that college professor when I went to a meeting in 85 if she'd ever slept with Ernest, which I thought was a little unsavory question.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at him, and her chin started trembling, and she got tears in her eyes, and she says, "Ernest Hemingway was my best friend. He was the best friend I ever had." And that's where the title of my book came from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, at 95, she still was very, very pretty. And most of the time, when you think of somebody at 95, you feel like they're just going to literally be like tissue paper and fall apart in front of you. But not Tilly.
No, and she had a bad back. I mean, a terrible back problem. But she was spunky. You were right. She was really spunky. And we loved her.
Yes. And I was amazed to find out all of the things that Ernest Hemingway went through before he committed suicide. And Tilly didn't hesitate to talk about this, and she really felt that the only reason he committed suicide is that he was so ill, he was actually dying, that he just couldn't take any more of the discomfort and the pain. And I was appalled to find out about the shock treatments he had been put through. I mean, that'd be enough to send anybody over the edge. Tell us what happened with Ernest Hemingway that caused him to go into this negative patterning physiologically as well as mentally. There's quite a bit in the way of circumstances with this, and it totally throws out of the window a lot of the propaganda and phony baloney that has been given out over these many years.
Well, there's several things, in my opinion. One, he was in a horrible airplane crash in 1954. That cracked open his head, and so the fluid was dripping out of his ear. I mean, he was hurt badly. And some people think that was the beginning of his downturn. But, you know, even towards the end last year of his life, he was still writing well, in my opinion. But I think alcohol is a major factor. He just drank prodigious amounts of alcohol. And then he was on these drugs for high blood pressure, which the Mayo doctors said, don't take those drugs anymore. Take another drug. They wanted to get him off those drugs. You know, drugs can depress you.
Mm-hmm.
Booze can depress you, too. And and then as soon as he got there back to the Mayo Clinic on November 30th, 1960, they put him into shock treatment, or shortly thereafter, they put him into shock treatments by this Dr. Rome. And I think he had about 15 of those during the months of December '61 and January and '62, or 61, 1960, December '60. And then they sent him home. But, you know, he hated it because it causes confusion and it obliterates your memory. And he's the kind of guy who never forgot anything. He had one of those photographic memories, and he collected everything, every piece of paper he ever got, but he never took notes, and because he remembered everything. And here they're giving him electroshock treatments that was obliterating his memory. Now, back in those days, they were just beginning to realize that electroshock treatments were not working well. And I think now they're doing it again. They're using it again. But they still should have really questioned whether they should do this to Ernest Hemingway. That was a big mistake.
Well, I think going back to utilizing it is just going back to a form of barbarism that I think is just appalling. But that's my bias. He also had cancer of the liver.
Well, that's what they said. No one knew. Mm-hmm. They didn't do an autopsy. That was suspected by Tilly Arnold and one other person that has written a book suspected that he had cancer, and Tilly thought he had cancer because he had a swollen stomach, cancer of the liver, and which is possible, but it was never proven because of they didn't do an autopsy.
One of the things that you described so vividly in your book is the last time that Tilly was with Ernest Hemingway, and she turned to someone and said, he's going to die. She knew that he wasn't going to be around very much longer, so when they found him and that he had, you know, shot himself, then yeah. they knew, she wasn't a bit surprised, because he just was in so much agony, and he had even told her he had been contemplating suicide because he did not want to go back to the clinic because he knew that he would never come out of that clinic. So he wanted to take charge of his own life, apparently, in his own way.
He always had. He was a unique, original human being.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was afraid they'd lock him up. In this case, he did go back for another month or 6 weeks. But they didn't lock him up, but they put him in a room with bars on it, so I think that's pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked his way out of the hospital, I believe. And they sent him home. Dr. Rome, in my letter, I've got a copy of the letter that Rome sent to Mary after the suicide that explains how Hemingway maneuvered the doctor and letting him go home. And as,
mm-hmm.
and as I point out, 3 days after he got home, he killed himself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There is a myth about the cat and Hemingway's home, and I know I saw something maybe 3 years ago. It was a documentary about all the cats, the six-toed cats that are around Hemingway's house. Now, he liked cats, but his son Patrick, he had a son, and he said that was a total myth, a total lie. Why do you think that became so successful?
I don't know why, but it was a myth. There was a... The best I can figure, this was in Key West. And if you go to the Key West house today, you'll see dozens of cats running around. And half of them got six toes. But I think it came from one cat that wandered into the, someone had shot and wandered into Hemingway's yard. And it had six toes. I don't think he shot it, but somebody else did. But it was in his yard. I think somehow that started there in Key West, and it's the myth down there, and it's perpetrated by the people who show to give you tours of the house in Key West. In Cuba, he had cats and dogs, but he loved cats. You're right.
You have so many interesting pictures. One of Jose Garate, who was Jose Andre Garate, and he was a very, very good friend of Hemingway. And fortunately, you were able to interview him before he passed away. Very handsome man. Very handsome man. And
he was.
He was a gold medalist, an Olympic gold medalist in 1924.
Right.
And
that's right.
Wow, what a group. And he had a very strong alliance of male friends that he kept company with.
Well, it's the mob, as Walter Houck pointed out. It's the mob. If he didn't have to say anything, but you knew when you were a part of the mob, when you were welcomed into his presence, and he trusted you, and believe me, he had to trust you. You were part of his mob, and from then on, you were pals. You know, that's the way
mm-hmm.
it was.
Now, with all of this research that you've done, how has this changed your life? What has it given to you in your life to research someone as well-known and famous as Ernest Hemingway, a phenomenal writer? How has this affected you?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't really have an answer. I certainly never did this for money, and the book is certainly not for... You don't make any money when these self-published books. But... I guess it's so like anybody, like you become a tennis, you have a passion for tennis, or you have a passion for John Steinbeck, and you just becomes a guiding passion. Every place we went on vacation, I looked for, went to places where Hemingway wrote and lived and drank, and what's it gotten me? I don't know. But it gives give me a lot of satisfaction. And, of course, now I'm going to give a speech in Lausanne. That's kind of a culmination, I guess, if anybody shows up for it.
Well, if they're into their 14th year on this, I think somebody's going to show up for it.
Well, we'll see.
Any excuse to go to Switzerland is a good excuse, right?
Well, yeah, the dollar's worth more in Switzerland than it is in the rest of Europe, so I'm looking forward to that.
Now, you had an unexpected discovery that was at the 4th International Hemingway Conference, and you said that some papers were found in the second floor storage room in an old house in Harvard Avenue in Toronto, Canada. And just, it's amazing how these things will turn up. And you wonder, how did they get from point A to point B?
Well, the story you're referring to is the typewriter that Hemingway used when he came back in 1922 with Hadley to have their child in Canada rather than France. So I think it was Canada rather than France. And he went to work for the Toronto Star for about 8 months. And the typewriter he used when he left the Toronto Star and went back to France with the baby and Hadley, he gave the typewriter to this lady, and she kept it for 40 years, and she died. And somehow my friend, a Hemingway scholar, Jim Brash, found out about it. He found out where it was located at this house you mentioned, and we went up there and typed on it. So that was the big discovery.
With all of this information that you have, do you have a website that people can go to find out more about what you've done and your research? Your book is marvelous, The Best Friend I Ever Had, Revelations about Ernest Hemingway from Those Who Knew Him, because you actually interviewed these people. And that took a lot of time, effort, curiosity, dealing with facts. Yes, and here you are with this wonderful publication, which I think is fabulous. But what's your website?
The website is, I thought I better do that, and I had help doing it, obviously, because it's a really good website. But it's called HemingwaysFriends.com, and it's spelled Hemingway's, no apostrophe S, just Hemingway's hyphen friends, FRIENDS.com. Hemingways-friends.com. And that'll tell you all you need to know about what's in the book, I think. A lot of it.
David, with your going to Switzerland and speaking about Ernest Hemingway, there are so many books that have been written about him. Do you think some people will be surprised with the revelations that you came up with?
I think that they will, especially those Mayo letters, the Mayo Clinic doctor letters. I think that that's going to interest some people. And it may cause some people to chew me out and say I'm violating privacies and all the rest of it. But as I'm going to tell them, if they complain, I'm going to say nothing Hemingway has ever done has not been examined and cross-examined, except maybe when he went to the toilet. So I'm not worried about that. But that's what's probably going to interest these academic people, are those letters that are in my book.
Well, to be able to have these letters, where did those medical letters come from? Because here's one, January 19th, 1961.
That's the main one. That's the main letter written by Dr. Rome to Mary Hemingway to explain what happened to Ernest at the Mayo Clinic. And in my opinion, it was a mea culpa. Mary Hemingway got those letters, and she gave copies of them, or gave them, to Tilly. And Tilly gave them to me.
What a wonderful...
That's how that happened.
See, you never know. You never... just
know.
When you think you have it all nice, sweet, and tight, somebody comes along and says, excuse me, I knew so-and-so, and I got this letter, and I've got that letter, and... I've even got a piece of their underwear. I mean, you just never know what has gone where with people.
Especially
it's fascinating.
True when you talk about computers. You have to be careful what you put on computers.
Absolutely. Well, David, it's been a delight having you as a guest.
You've been
so glad
that
you...
I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I'm so glad you put this book together because I think it is a gift to people of the world, especially if they love good literature. Ernest Hemingway's writings relate a time frame that we will not see again, but a way of thinking. There's just so much that he gave, and I love the movies that were produced that I'm aware of, For Whom the Bell Tolls with Gary Cooper and Ingrid Bergman,
and then
The Old Man and the Sea with Spencer Tracy. Those are classics. They really should be seen by just about everybody because it's magnificent what they were able to do with that material. David Nuffer, thank you very much. And by the way, his last name is spelled N like Nelly, U-F-F-E-R. Go to Hemingway's and then hyphen friends.com and you'll find out more information. But the book is absolutely amazing to read. The detail is really great. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. You're very welcome, David, again. Thank you for being my guest. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756. If you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, all I need from you when you call in is your first name or your initial, and of course I love to know where you're calling in from. After that, sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you like. I want to also remind you about a couple of things. Number one, I have 4 single event passes and 2 all access passes to the International Film Festival that is starting today in Seattle, Washington. And if you'd like to have one of those passes, I realize it's short notice, but if you're in Seattle and you'd like to see the film on Programming the Nation, which is absolutely incredible. We did an interview on it on Monday, and Jeff Warwick was my guest, and then we lost him because his Skype connection disappeared into the ethers. But what this is absolutely phenomenal positive information for us to be aware of. And so this is its big film coming out, and it's going to be played in its full entirety on the 8th of June. But the festival itself is going to be going on for 10 days. So I have 2 free all-access passes. That means that you will be able to get in through any and all of the events starting today, going through for 10 days. And then I have 4 single event tickets that we'll be able to give you for the event on Programming the Nation on the 8th. So please, if you would like to get one of those passes, contact me, call my office directly, The number is 800-872-8852 so that I can take your information and leave it at the Will Call office, or to send me an email and put the high priority tag on it, because being out of the office for a couple of days, my email list is, it is so long. I still haven't gotten through it today. So be sure you put a high importance tag on it so that I'll know that this, and put in the subject matter, tickets for the Seattle event or something like that, because I will get that to you as soon as possible. They will be in Will Call, but I need your contact information so that we can get that to you. Also, if you have had a paranormal experience that has really affected your thinking, your life, whether it's about communicating with animals, a near-death experience, dreams, whatever it might be, I would love to hear from you. The reason being is I'm putting a book together. My goal is to collect 100 stories to be able to publish in this book, along with some of the experiences I've had. And I'd like it to be sort of an information resource for people, so when they read it, they realize that they are not the only ones that go through things like this, and that it really is not as abnormal as you think. Sometimes when we have material that we read, I know that impacted me years ago when I started into the self-discovery of psychic abilities. So if you have your story, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, International, and that's the entire word, international.com. So do get that to me. I also want to give you information about shows that are coming up this month live. I am going to be doing, actually, I have another program. In fact, let me get out the material right now. I am going to be doing a program tomorrow at 4:03 in the afternoon. We'll be starting. I'm going to be on the air with Matt Allen, and it is called OutlawRadio.tv, OutlawRadio.tv, and I'm going to be his guest. We'll also be having callers available, but I do not know what the call-in number is. This was all confirmed for me just yesterday. When I was on the road. Now, that is going to be tomorrow on Saturday, and again, that'll be at 4:03 in the afternoon that we'll begin the program. Then on Monday, yep, it's going to be a busy month, this month of June, I'm going to be appearing on Blog Radio with Janice Wilson, and we're going to be on for an hour from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific time, and the call-in number, if you wanted to call in and chat with me, is 646-652-4558. Again, that's the Janice Wilson show. And what I would say is, if you want to get the link to that show, go into my newsletter. In fact, all of the links and information regarding the upcoming shows that I've got on my newsletter, you'll be able to just tap right into. Go into my website, Delphi International, go over to the left, push the newsletter button. You'll find the latest newsletter right up there for your review. Go down to upcoming broadcasts and appearances. The link for Janice Wilson is huge, so I'm not even going to give it to you over the air, but you can go in there, tap onto it, I'll make a copy, and then you're going to be able to go in and listen to her show. On June 20th, we didn't know it was going to be the 13th or the 20th, I just had it confirmed this morning on June 20th, which is a Sunday, I'm going to be on Bipolar Radio with Susan and Bert at 11 in the morning Pacific time. Now, you can go in to Bipolar Nation Radio, Bipolar Nation Radio on Facebook and listen, or you can go to the website latalkradio.com, and it's going to be obviously live. The call-in number, if you want to call in and chat with me on Sunday, the 20th, is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. And the other one that's coming up on a Sunday is June 27th. It will be 3:30 Pacific time. Denise Barnes is the host. The talk show is titled Differences. It comes out of Nashville, Tennessee, on station WVOL 1470, which is the station that Oprah Winfrey originally started out on. I will be on air live with Denise, and the call-in number in Tennessee will be 615 615-737-9865. That's 615-737-9865. So that brings you up to date with all the good things that are going on. And again, if you want to call and chat with me this afternoon, give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, being that this is a month where we are going to be celebrating Father's Day, I have a number of interviews booked relating for or to the fellas. On Monday, we're going to be talking with Bill Odekirk, Tracking My Soul. This is a man's story about his journey towards self-discovery. Then we're going to be talking about baby boomer men. Barbara Kennedy is going to be with me, and gals, you're going to want to hear this because it is absolutely amazing how she describes the baby boomer generation and how these guys, many of them, need to be aware of the changes that have evolved. Welcome to the jungle. Hillary Smith is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about the mental condition and physiological condition called bipolar. What is it? Why does it occur? We do know it has to do with physiological chemistry. What is one trigger in one person isn't in another. But Hillary comes out with it with an honesty that is just wonderfully refreshing. And no mumbo jumbo. Why? Because she lives it. This is a part of her life. And she's done an outstanding job with the book. And then The Kids Who See Ghosts, Karen Goody. This is a book I have been privileged to be involved with. And there is a section on my comments regarding the paranormal and children. And Karen is going to be talking about how she has researched this book and how kids, if you have children that are very psychic, you're going to want to know about this information because it's very helpful. So we're going to have a great time with that. And then Visions of a Universal Humanity, Barbara Max Hubbard, who is in her 80s. This woman is highly respected and admired for her understanding regarding the work of mind and the essence of spirituality in life, and a tremendous compassion about this world that we live in and how we can make a change. Now, this is a movie. I've had the good fortune of having a number of very fine movies, the Programming the Nation that I was talking about earlier. I've got some other movies that I've done reviews on that I'll be talking about, not this month, but next month. And it's just wonderful. The people are taking the time to put together some real good quality material, and Barbara's movie, Visions of a Universal Humanity, is absolutely outstanding. So next week we have a great lineup. I hope that you will make a note on your calendar. If you want more information about my guests, go and get the brief reviews of my upcoming guests on my show on BBS. You can go in at any time, find out who's coming up, find out, you know, well in advance. You'll get the whole month's lineup. It's all there for your viewing pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Lyndia Canfield wrote a delightful poem, and of course, if you're out driving around the countryside this time of the year, there's so many beautiful wildflowers, including acres of buttercups wherever you might happen to be wandering. I hope you have the privilege of seeing them. This is the poem that she wrote. A carpet of buttercups lines the hills as sunshine spills its gold in flowers. What a visual. Wonderful, wonderful visual. Well, I've got some a recipe that I'll be happy to share with you. Also, we will be coming back after break, and I've got some money-saving tips and some other things to share with you. Plus, if you're feeling sort of down in the mouth about your life, hey, count your blessings. I've got a story to share with you that I think will make you feel a little bit better about who you are, what you're going through, and realize life is a journey. You can have a down day. That's okay. Just don't stay down. Get up, flex your mental, emotional, and spiritual and physical muscles, and put a smile on that face, because there's a lot to be grateful for in life, and you need to appreciate that. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again,
872-8852. Hi, this is Donna. Get that pad of paper handy and pen. I've got a wonderful recipe for a salad that I know will absolutely make your taste buds dance. It's a spinach, grilled pork, and pineapple salad. It's just, oh, it's really, really good. So we'll be coming back to that in just a minute. But I wanted to share some money-saving tips with you today. If you're like me and you have a printer at home, every time you have to go out and buy ink for that printer, it's like your checkbook or credit card sort of moans and groans, because the printers cost nothing compared to what you have to pay for ink. Ink is really expensive, and if you're like me, you use the colored stuff quite a bit. Well, printer's ink doesn't have to eat your money up. I found out about a tip. In a million years, I don't know that this would have crossed my mind, but this is something you can do. All you have to do is think about the font that you're using for printing. Now, there are technical professionals at the University of Wisconsin in Green Bay that found that if you switched from commonly used Arial to Century Gothic slashes ink usage by 30%, that's huge. How many times would you perceive that just changing a font would decrease the amount of ink that you use? Well, why this works is that the letters are thinner. That's right, they are thinner. And the minor difference means you'll need to replace ink cartridges less often. And I'll share with you a trick that my husband shared with me, as well as a printer specialist. This guy's kept busy going all around town just fixing printers and supplying ink. And he said, if you'll take out your ink cartridges and shake them really, really hard, he said there's a tremendous amount of waste with the ink powders that are used. And we have an HP, and the cartridges, you shake them up, and you really have to shake them because the powdered ink that they use, it compacts on the inside. And you may find that cartridge will last you longer than you could ever imagine. So just keep that in mind. Shake those cartridges up. Loosen up that powder on the inside. I was amazed when I watched this man who filled our cartridges. We have some sizable cartridges, and he's able to fill them. And he said, I'm going to show you something. Look at how much when I go to fix your cartridge and put new ink material in it, how much goes out, because we can't mix it. I can't use the old ink with the new ink. It's a no-no. You just don't do that. Creates problems. I was astonished at the amount that came out on the newspaper that he would spread out. He said, all of that is wasted. So take those cartridges and shake them up. But think, too, about that font. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Also, gals, you know how sometimes when you have to clean things and you need a fine brush that you want to use? Now, this is really going to sound silly, but guys, this may even come in handy for you. If you're working with something that requires a real fine brush, what you could use is a mascara wand. Now, they are absolutely amazing for cleaning around real tiny things. Why? Because, first of all, those bristles that they've got on those mascara wands are pretty tough. They're very compact, and they're absolutely wonderful after you clean them and getting to hard-to-reach areas that are around faucets, doorknobs, even with cars. You stop and think about it. Here in the Northwest, we get, if your car is outside, you'll find that mold and fungus will start developing around chrome parts or little tiny areas. You go, how in the world am I going to get to that? A toothbrush won't do it, and you don't want to scratch the paint. Well, a mascara wand would enable you to get there. It's even good to use a clean one, of course, on a computer keyboard on their letters. You want to soak it in eye makeup remover or shampoo even will do the trick and clean those bristles. But that little mascara wand can really be a handy-dandy cleaning tool. Who would have given any attention to that? Donna Sebo here. Hey, I've got that recipe for this salad, and I think you're going to like it, so let me dish it out for you. This is all you need, and it is so flavorful. If you like pineapple, you like fresh spinach, and you like pork, and of course you could substitute another meat if you would like, but pork has its own special flavor. And I know it's one of our favorite meats in the Sebo household. This is what you're going to need. You're going to need a half a cup of pineapple juice, a half a cup of olive oil. I'd recommend the lighter flavored oil, the half a cup of each, half a cup of pineapple juice, a half a cup of olive oil, a quarter of a cup of honey mustard, quarter of a cup of honey mustard, 3 tablespoons of white vinegar, 3 tablespoons of white vinegar, 1 tablespoon of grated peeled fresh ginger, nothing like that fresh ginger. Oh, gives such a wonderful, wonderful taste to the salad. A half of a teaspoon of salt, half a teaspoon of salt, a quarter of a teaspoon of pepper. You're going to need about 1 pound of pork tenderloin, and then you're going to need about 1/2 of a fresh pineapple, peeled, cored, and cut into 1-inch thick rings. And then about 6 ounces of baby spinach leaves. And if you like radishes, take about 4 of them and cut them into 1/2-inch wedges. And then if you like scallions, try cutting up, finally, about 1/2 cup of scallions, both the white and the green of the scallion, and 1/3 cup of fresh mint leaves. Now, if you don't have the fresh mint, you could use the dry, but I'll tell you what, the fresh mint really is optimum. Now, this is what you do. Your pork, now you can go to your market if you want to cut your time down and get your cooked pork. They have that in your stores at this time. But all you want to do, if you want to make your own pork, and again, you're going to need the tenderloin, about 1 pound, and this can be fixed on a grill outside. You mix your pineapple juice, your olive oil, your honey mustard, your white vinegar, your fresh ginger, salt, and pepper. Mix that all together, and that takes you all of 30 seconds. And you place your pork and 1/2 cup of this juice mixture in a food storage bag. You seal, and you just refrigerate it for 1 hour. And all you have to do is get one of those bags and put it in there and shake it up, and every once in a while maybe just go in and just turn it. It's a nice marinade. Then the pineapple that you have peeled and cored and cut into 1/2-inch rings, you want to brush your pineapple with 1/4 cup of the remaining juice mixture. And then if you've got a grill, you can put it on the grill and just turn it once, and the pineapple get real sweet and real tender. The sugars really come out when you grill it. You can also broil it. If you don't have the opportunity to fix this outside on a grill, you can broil it and let it cool. And then you'll take your tenderloin, and you will go ahead and you will cook your tenderloin on the grill until it's no longer pink in the center. And tenderloin is just wonderful. It's very lean. It cooks very quickly. It'll cook in about 15 to 20 minutes. Your pineapple rings, then all you do to fix this delicious salad, you cut your rings that have been grilled and are now exquisite. exquisitely sweet and flavorful into 6 pieces. And then in a bowl, you take your spinach, if you have radishes, scallions, your mint, and you mix it with the remaining juice mixture. Put it on a platter with your pork and pineapple. Now, if you do not have a grill to work with and you want to fix this in the oven, turn it to 425 degrees, roast your pork on a pan until it's no longer pink in the center. That'll take maybe 30 minutes. And position your rack, like I said, where your pineapple, so you can broil the pineapple. Yum. Delicious stuff, and summer temps are here. We want to make it sweet and simple. This is Donna Siebel. We're out of time. Have a fabulous weekend, and remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna. Be back with you bright and sassy on Monday. Have a great weekend again. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.